Hey folks, good afternoon. How's everybody doing? Good? It's good to see that you made it here. It's the longest walk, I think, in the entire conference. So anybody who made it here, thank you and congratulations. So, talking of innovation, this morning there was news on CNN and this just completely blew my mind. Dunkin' Donuts has released a new breakfast sandwich, which is basically a glazed donut with a fried egg and bacon in between that. So don't just imagine that innovation is going on in the tech industry. There's a lot of innovation going on outside as well. That remains to be seen. You know, does it come along with a doctor and a nurse? I don't know, but you know, sounds like a pretty interesting dish to me. So how's the conference going for everybody so far? Good? Well, just so you're sure, well, I guess not. Sorry, am I supposed to be on 2, 3, 4? Oh, 1. Yeah, well. All right, so this is the what's new in System Center 2012 R2 talk in Virtual Machine Manager. So we just give a few more minutes for people to show up, and the timer shouldn't start right now. I think we've still got a few minutes. I think we'll run the whole gamut because I have a feeling people will have a few questions. I hope so. Yeah. So how many of you there at MMS? You know, we ran a session on 2012 SP1 VMM at MMS. That was running off of a phone because we had no internet connectivity. At least this time we have internet connectivity. So hopefully the demo should go a little faster. And this session has a lot of demos. So if I can't show the demos, then I guess we just have to figure out what to talk about because most of it of this talk is about demos. All right, let's get started. So good afternoon, everybody. My name is Vijay Tiwari. I'm a program manager in System Center. I run the program management team for Virtual Machine Manager. Have been with Microsoft for a few years now. So first and foremost, before I go anywhere forward, I want to thank the VMM team. That actually is a picture of most of the VMM team. We took it before MMS. Some people were still off, you know, writing some code. But that's a picture of almost all of the VMM team. And there are a few of them actually here in the audience as well. I think I see Chung, I see Jonaby, a few people here. So thank you so much for being here. It's a privilege to represent the team, and I really thank them for all the work. The other thing I wanted to show you this picture is that we are also people, we are also humans. So sometimes we make mistakes, just remember that. The other thing I want to thank is, I want to thank Jonaby She's been instrumental in putting this deck together. So I want to thank her for doing that. And if I mess up, it's my mistake. You know, she's done a fantastic job with the deck. And then there are some people who are not here who I want to thank as well. They, in fact, they're not even in the U.S. They've been really, really helpful in helping me put together this deck and just overall have been really, really helpful. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it. All right, so let's move along. So, Jeffrey Snower and Jeff Woolsey had a foundational session where we talked about the cloud OS. And as he rightly pointed out, the cloud OS is not something that we ship. It's not a box product. It's a concept. It's a vision of how we anticipate and how we envision the future of our customers. So customers are going to have their own data centers. That is represented by the customer part of the cloud here. Our service provider partners and customers are going to put together their own clouds using the Microsoft stack. That's the service provider cloud. And then we have Windows Azure, which is Microsoft's public cloud. And customers are going to live or have their assets across all these three types of clouds. And our goal is to make sure that we provide you with a consistent experience, a consistent set of building blocks, so that you as a customer are free to choose and deploy your applications on any of these clouds, depending upon the needs of your application and the needs of your customers, right? So I'm going to focus on mainly transforms the data center part of this this cloud, but there are other aspects of this cloud operating system as well. And if you haven't already heard it, I want to reiterate. The Hyper-V that we ship to our customers is the same Hyper-V that powers Windows Azure, right? So that is the level of consistency which we are trying to provide you as customers. So you can be rest assured that when you deploy any of our cloud stacks in your environment, we are internally using it at the best possible scale and stress testing it so that you can be rest assured that you are getting the best bits from us. In fact, I'll talk a little later about how we are running an internal test cloud that is powered by Hyper-V and System Center as well, which spins up and down like 70,000 or 30,000 VMs a day as a part of our test infrastructure inside Microsoft. I'll talk to it a little bit later as well. All right. So in this section of the conversation or in this talk, I'm going to focus on the customer and service provider part of the technologies that we are providing you and how VMM really helps lay the foundation for both these types of clouds, whether you're in a private cloud inside the customer's data center or whether you are inside as a service provider, you're building a cloud which your customers can make use of, right? I'm going to basically focus on this part of the conversation. And there are lots of other conversations about Windows Azure here as well. I'll talk a little bit about the consistency aspect and while I go along. All right. So this is a slide. A lot of people that I speak to, cloud has become an overused term. And so it really confuses people about what the cloud really means. For us, the cloud is really, really simple. You take a set of raw resources, compute, networking, and storage. You pool them together. Then you should be able to allocate it to your customers on an as-needed basis. If a customer wants to be able to create 10 virtual machines, you should be able to give that customer a quota of 10 virtual machines, and that system, the management infrastructure, should ensure that that customer does not exceed that quota so that you as an IT administrator don't have to do anything manually. Automate everything. UI is great. I need it because I need to give demos here. I'm seriously saying that, but you should really focus on automating everything. That is not to say that we are not going to do UI. We're going to enhance our UI again and again because we know that a lot of customers actually use it, but we really want you to focus on automating everything with PowerShell. Jeffrey and I have a standing joke going within each other. He boasts about the fact that Windows Server has 2,500 commandlets, and I boast about the fact that we've got 540 commandlets in VMM itself, right? Which is about, given that VMM is just a management server, I think it's a pretty impressive task. So what we have done, we actually took a bet on PowerShell way back when, and our entire system is built on PowerShell. There are only, I think, three things in VMM which you cannot do, which you can do in the UI, which you cannot do in PowerShell. Everything else is automated, and that relates to some quirky things in services that you cannot actually do with a PowerShell, but everything else is doable in VMM using PowerShell. So you must get comfortable with PowerShell and use PowerShell to automate and make your life easy. The next thing about a cloud is that it's metered, right? Now, metered doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to subcharge your departments and start going into this fancy chargeback model. There are some customers who may be in that mode, but at least you should be able to meter to say that, look, you as a customer are using 10 virtual machines, right? You should be able to go back to that person and say, do you really need these 10 virtual machines? So that's why one of the fundamental tenets of a cloud is that it's metered, right? The next thing is key to enabling you to really do your jobs efficiently, which is to enable self-service. Your customers are constantly coming to you and saying, hey, I want you to spin up, you know, a virtual machine for me, and here are the characteristics. They open a ticket in Service Manager, and then you are left, you know, manually clicking through a bunch of buttons and creating a VM, and then you're sending an email to the person, hey, a VM is ready, and that person will come back and say, no, the spec is wrong, I want you to create this for me. This back and forth is just taking time away from you, preventing you from doing your real job, right? So that's the fundamental asset and the fundamental tenet of a cloud, enable self-service. Let your customers go and create their own virtual machines. Trust the system to ensure the role-based access control. Trust the system. Deploy the system in such a manner that it enforces the quota. So it prevents your underlying infrastructure from being overloaded, right? But if you look at the concept of a cloud, what does first come to mind? The first thing that comes to mind is something like Windows Azure or Amazon. And what is the first thing that comes to mind when you talk of Windows Azure or Amazon? It is the fact that I can walk up to a website, click a few buttons, and I have a virtual machine ready for me to use. That is what your customers in your companies are asking for, right? And we have it available for you to do. We have all the bits. We have the hypervisor. We have the management stack. We have the enforcement. We have the policy. We have the self-service portal. So use that. You know, decouple yourself from this mundane task of being able to create VMs and help yourself and help your customers. That's what self-service is about. So what I'm going to do today is try and figure out, you know, let's figure out together how you can use VMM to actually build the basics of your infrastructure for this cloud. I won't talk about how you enable self, I mean, I'll talk about how you enable self-service in terms of role-based access control, but I won't actually talk about how to deploy the self-service portal. I'll show the self-service portal in a few demos, but there are other sessions which will talk about how to do that. But I'm going to focus on how you really build out an infrastructure that enables you to empower your customers in a cloud-like environment, or in a cloud, all right? And just from a conversation perspective, if you feel like asking questions, you know, just ask me, and if it becomes too much, I'll ask you to hold off, but otherwise, let's just go on. All right, so this is a slide which is an old slide, but I wanted to keep it here so that all of you at least understand what VMM does, because it's hard for me to tell how many of you have actually used VMM and how many are new to VMM, right? So at your lowermost layer, you need, like I said, you need a pooled set of resources of compute, network, and storage. Let's start with storage. Your storage in the way VMM is constructed is we allow you to use any kind of storage for your virtualization infrastructure, whether you're using SANs, which are topped by iSCSI or Fibre Channel. You can use a file server, right, which is either a Windows file server using SMB 3.0, or it is a third-party NAS device using SMB 3.0. We support the administration and management of all these types of devices from a storage standpoint. That takes care of storage. Then let's look at networking. From a networking standpoint, we have enabled in 2012 R2 the ability for you to actually even go out and introspect physical switches through an investment called the data center abstraction layer. And Arista has actually announced in this decade that they're going to OMI enable or DAL enable all their physical switches. And we are working with the rest of the industry so that they can also be enabled to actually communicate with VMM and be managed through VMM. In addition to the underlying physical switches, VMM manages all the deployment of your virtual switches, your PVLANs, NVGRE. It does all the management of the virtual networking infrastructure right from inside VMM. Okay? You can have hardware from any OEM, whether it's Intel, AMD, it doesn't matter. You know, that's a Hyper-V thing. We support Hyper-V as a hypervisor on both AMD and Intel x64 processors. And then layered on top of that, you have a virtualization layer, right? We support Windows Server 2012, Windows Server 2012 R2, Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1, VMware, and Xen, Citrix Xen Server, right? So we cover a gamut of virtualization platforms, right? Obviously, we fundamentally believe that Hyper-V is the best. However, we understand that you as a customer have both VMware and Xen as well, and so we support that as a virtualization platform as a part of the resource pool, right? So what you do is you take this aggregated pool of resources and you pool them based on SLA. And you create these things called clouds inside VMM, right? A number of people come and ask me, well, you know, should I name the cloud after the department that I'm going to give it to? And I fundamentally say, no. A cloud is a unit of abstraction that encompasses a service level for you. So if you've got the best hardware that you've recently purchased, you've got a SAN which has got some SSDs and spinning media so you can actually use tiered storage and so on and so forth, and we said your best hardware, call that your gold cloud or call that your production cloud, right? So that's an SLA construct. The cloud becomes an SLA construct. And then you can delegate the access of that capacity, of that cloud, to any users. And those users in VMM happen to be called self-service users. That should be your department. So you can call it the marketing department user role, you can call it the finance department user role, and so on and so forth, right? The way I suggest people do it is that you construct an AD group. You construct a security group in AD called marketing, right? And then all the people in marketing can be assigned to that marketing AD group, and then take that marketing AD group and assign access to the appropriate clouds to the marketing AD group, right? So you can say that the marketing AD group has the ability to create their marketing, so we'll give them 25 virtual machines. And then you can say any person inside marketing can construct or can use only a certain number of virtual machines as well. So that's how you basically constrain access to who gets access to and how much access do they get to your cloud capacity, right? So key points to remember, cloud is an SLA construct. The user role is what is used to assign access to your clouds. And then, you know, a key part of enabling self-service is you model the applications that you're deploying inside your environments in service templates, right? So there's a customer I spoke to, you know, whose developers are repeatedly deploying SharePoint farms. So they deploy they deploy SharePoint Foundation, they deploy a SQL Server, and they deploy AD. They deploy these three VMs, and they deploy hundreds of them in a month because they're doing development, and each one of them needs their isolated environment. Now, just imagine if you are an IT organization which is supporting this kind of a customer need of being able to spin up hundreds of VMs. You will just be inundated with trying to enable them to do it if you do it manually. So the way to do it is work with your developers, model this construct as a service template, model the SharePoint Foundation, model the SQL, model the AD, encapsulate that in a service template, and preferably assign them isolated networks, because if you're doing AD, you can't put it on your corpnet, right? Give them allow them to create isolated networks for them, model it as a service template, and put it up into a self-service portal. So they can and constrain it from a quota perspective. Once you've done this, you've enabled your developers to continue to create these SharePoint farms, which they need for development over and over again without you getting in the way, without you getting inundated by these requests. Make sense? So that's really what standardized services is about, right? And VMM actually has all these abstractions and all these logical constructs to enable you to actually go make that happen. All right. Now, before I go anywhere else, you know, I'd like to also give a shout out to some of our partners. Cisco actually announced yesterday that the Cisco 1000 for Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012 SP1 is now available for production. And you can go download it and, you know, from the Cisco site and go try it out. This has been a great collaboration with Cisco. Just want to give a shout out and let people know that this one is for Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012 SP1. And we are already working with them for the version of the 1KV that will be updated to work with Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2. In fact, in some of the networking sessions, we'll actually show a brief demonstration of how that collaboration is going as well. The next thing I wanted to show was that, you know, we fundamentally believe in standards-based management. You know, there are a bunch of people. I think Hector just recently came in here as well. He's sitting right there in the corner. He is the storage expert on the VMM team. We go and attend all Storage Network Industry Association plug fests, which allow us to interoperate and test interoperability between VMM and SANs. This is a picture from the latest plug fest, which was held about 2 weeks back, and it shows a whole bunch of our partners and how we test interoperability between VMM and our storage partners. So, you know, basically the list of SANs that we support using SMIS is growing ever longer. And if you as a customer have a SAN in your environment and you find that VMM does not support it, please communicate that to your storage vendor so they can work with us and we can work with them to make sure that they interoperate with us. Because in talking to customers, you know, and I've spoken to an overseas customers, they're a casino in Europe, and the feedback that I got from them about SMIS was just amazing. In fact, to be honest, they're actually the largest casino in Europe. They told me that their ability to use SMIS has dramatically simplified their life as a customer. And this is just, you know, feedback that I've been getting over and over again from many, many customers. All right? All right, so which areas did we invest in VMM in 2012 R2? Well, pretty much across the board. But it was a short release for us, so obviously the gap between SP1 and R2 is not going to be dramatic, but there are a whole bunch of things that we have done to actually make it simpler for you and invested in the new things that have been coming in R2. And there were a few things that were left over which we did not support in Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, which we have added support for in this release. All right. So, you know, when we were actually looking at how to do this talk, yesterday I went and attended a lot of sessions, and we prepped for a whole bunch of sessions even before coming here. But, you know, it became hard because literally every demo or everything that we wanted to say as a part of the VMM overview session has already been said somewhere, which is great because, you know, everybody's talking about VMM. Love it. You know, it's great because that's the way it should be. After all, it's the fabric controller. So we were in a bit of a dilemma of how do we actually structure this talk, given that everybody's already talked about it. So we came up with the story. So I'm going to tell you a story of two infrastructure admins who are managing their infrastructure. One is an enterprise administrator, right? And the other is a service administrator on the service provider, right? And I'll talk about how both of them lead their lives and actually do a bunch of this stuff using VMM, right? And I'll, this customer itself is Wingtips. So Wingtip is the private enterprise customer, and the administrator's name is Erin, and this company makes toys. And so what I'm going to talk about is how Erin basically designs her infrastructure and deploys VMM and uses VMM. And then I'll talk from a Contoso hosting perspective, that is the service provider. I didn't name their, you know, I couldn't come up with a good enough name, you know, to match with Erin. But just imagine there is an administrator in Contoso, and that I'm going to show you some of what Contoso's administrator does as well. Now, I just want to make sure that every technology that we are shipping in VMM, there is nothing in VMM which lights up just because you're an enterprise customer or just because you're a service provider. It's available to everybody, right? However, there are certain things and certain pieces of technology which we believe a service provider is more likely to use than an enterprise customer, right? Or an enterprise customer which wants to act like a large service provider inside their enterprise, right? So there are these things, and I'll try and point them out, but I think, you know, you'll sort of figure out which ones are more service provider focused. But I just want to be clear, it's available to everybody to use, right? It's not specific only to a single customer. All right. So as with everything else, as technology geeks, where does our story start? It starts with a whiteboard in your office, right? So this is a picture of Erin's whiteboard, right? And so what do you need to do? The first and foremost thing you need to do is you have to deploy your infrastructure. You have to deploy your fiber channel SANs. You have to deploy your scale-out file server using a bunch of disks. And then you have to cluster your Hyper-V hosts on top of these storage, right? So the model that we recommend is that you take storage, Hyper-V clusters require shared storage. So deploy your storage, whether it's block-based storage or file-based storage. Then deploy your Hyper-V hosts and cluster them using the shared storage, right? So you've got a bunch of clustered hosts. Then you need to make sure that from a networking perspective, you have IP address management. You create your logical switches. And this is fundamentally, I want to make sure that this is understood. We want you to deploy logical switches. Move away from deploying a single switch on each Hyper-V host. It is not a scalable solution, regardless of how big or small you are. The logical switch in VMM offers a ton of capabilities, which the individual Hyper-V switch will not, because it allows us to take all the switches across Hyper-V hosts and manage them in one unit. So we can assign policy, particularly if you're using extensions. It makes it really easy for you as an administrator to administer a logical switch. So move away from using individual Hyper-V switches and use logical switches. Then you need to model your physical network, right? And that's constructed using logical networks. Now today, we are not in a position to entirely discover your physical network. We have made some progress, but it's not fully there. Therefore, you as an administrator will need to tell us what your physical infrastructure looks like, and that is captured in the construct in VMM called logical networks, right? Now, here's where things get hairy. It's a physical network, but we call it a logical network, right? Sometimes as geeks, it's really hard to name things correctly. But a part of it has to do with legacy, but that apart. So just imagine logical networks capture your physical network topology, right? But remember, your physical networks can be isolated using VLANs. It could be isolated using something like the Cisco 1KV, which could use any kind of technology under the covers to create its isolation. You could have no isolation. It doesn't matter, right? It is all encapsulated as a part of the logical network. Now, layered on top, we have another abstraction called the VM network. The VM network is what the virtual machine connects to, right? And the reason we've got a layer of abstraction here is because the VM network allows us to model how you construct your isolated networks using NVGRE, right? So when you construct a VM network, you can say that, look, this VM network is directly passed through to a network, logical network, which is isolated using VLANs, or you can say that this VM network is isolated using NVGRE, right? So having the second layer of abstraction allows us to model how NVGRE is abstracted away from you as a customer. So two things to take away from the slide, or a few things to take away from networking. Logical networks encapsulate your physical layout of the network. VM networks is what all VMs connect to, regardless of whether the isolation is using NVGRE or it is using any other kind of technology, or even if it is using no isolation. All right? So let's move on from networking. Then I talked about how you construct a cloud and delegate capacity of that cloud to your customers, right? And the third thing is, now I'm bringing a scenario where Wingtip as a company is buying capacity from a service provider, Contoso, and I'm going to show you how the Wingtip company can actually construct a networking topology which allows the VMs that are sitting in Contoso to just feel like an extension of what is running inside Wingtip, right? Because if you're an administrator in Wingtip, and you have acquired capacity from a service provider because you were running out of capacity and your marketing department all of a sudden needs the ability to spin up 50 VMs. Well, you as an administrator want to be able to treat these 50 VMs from a networking standpoint just like they are inside your domain. So they can join your domain controller. They can access storage inside your enterprise. And so I'm going to show you how infrastructure on Contoso side is set up so that a Wingtip can actually connect up into this environment, all right? So the first thing, Microsoft is running huge clouds. Whether you want to call it a cloud or not, but huge, huge deployments. We got Bing, we got Windows Azure, we got Xbox Live, we got, you know, Outlook.com. These are like massive properties, right? And so we have learned a lot in learning, we've learned a lot in deploying and managing and operating these large properties. And one of the key things that we learned was consistency, right? And from a consistency standpoint, we said you should deploy in a unit. We call it stamps. You can call it scale unit, whatever you want to call it. Effectively, it's a unit of storage and networking. It's managed by System Center. And in a data center, you can have many stamps, right? So, and you need to account for a disaster recovery solution for the VMs that are running on your stamps. Some of you may need it, some of you may not need it. But at a high level, a stamp, let's look at what a logical unit of, view of a stamp looks like. It's got some management nodes, which actually are running System Center. It's got compute, it's got some networking capabilities, and it's got storage. And you may have multiple such stamps inside your data center, right? So let's take a look at what a physical view of a stamp looks like. Here, I've modeled a stamp like a rack, but it doesn't have to be a rack. A stamp could span multiple racks, right? Depending upon your need, right? But in this scenario, we model a rack as a stamp. So you've got some compute nodes. In this case, we happen to take three compute nodes, cluster them as a Hyper-V cluster, right? And put all System Center components on top of it. VMM, DPM, OM, Service Manager, your self-service portals all go onto that stamp. Then you've got an edge component, which actually provide the network connectivity. Right, your gateway, which allows NVGRE VMs to plow out and go to a physical network. Then you've got your compute nodes, which are a bunch of Hyper-V hosts clustered. And then you've got storage. Right, it could be, let's look at what management looks like. So the first thing people ask me is, can I virtualize VMM? Can I virtualize OM? I'm saying, don't ask the question. Just virtualize everything. Right? There are a few instances where customers may want to have a few of their capabilities on physical hosts. Like some people, prefer to have DPM on the physical host. Some people prefer to have AD on the physical host. But other than those, they should only be exceptions. You should virtualize everything. Right? So this deployment topology actually virtualizes everything. AD, DNS, DHCP, OM, SM, VMM, everything is virtualized as a VM. And when I say virtualized, this is a sample topology that is running right now in our test labs back in Redmond, right? So we've actually deployed this, and we are testing it in this mode, exactly, right? So what does your edge network contain? It actually contains a virtualization gateway, right, which allows you to go out from the virtual to physical, and it allows you to manage your top-of-rack switches as well. From a compute standpoint, they are all Hyper-V hosts, which are clustered together, sitting on the back-end storage, which could be iSCSI, which could be a SANS fiber channel, or it could be SMB 3.0 file servers. Make sense? All right. And then you can have multiple such racks, and then you aggregate the capacity from these through SPF and expose them to a self-service portal. Why is this important? It's important because you want to be able to repeat this deployment over and over again, right? So the first thing you do is you create the first set of storage and the first set of Hyper-V hosts. These cannot be done using System Center. You need to be able to do it outside of System Center. It's very easy to use PowerShell that comes inside Windows Server to model the creation of the first scale-out file server, storage server if you're using. Deploy the first Hyper-V host, deploy VMM. And then everything else, we are going to make available as service templates. So later on in this year, after the release, I believe, we are going to make all System Center components available as VMM service templates. So you'll be able to deploy, you'll just have to customize those service templates and deploy them as VMs through VMM, right? And then you need to configure your storage, networking, and edge scale units, all right? And then you can keep deploying these over and over again. So this picture, I'll build it out quickly to sort of give you a nature of what the, let me go back. This is important. So how does the network look like, right? So you've got some network, public internet that comes into your environment. Then you've got a corporate network, which is isolated by a firewall from your network. And then you've got a management network, and I call this a management network because this is where your BMC traffic, etc., goes to the Hyper-V hosts, right, which goes on to the Hyper-V hosts. which have another network which allows them to use for live migration, cluster traffic, as well as storage. And then you've got tenant VMs, right, who can either be connected through a gateway to the public internet, or they can be connected to corpnet through a edge router as well, right, which I don't have on this picture. But you could also spin up isolated networks using NVGRE on these tenant backbone networks, right? And then you have Windows Azure Pack, which was recently released. If you're going to offer a public internet-facing portal, you need to have it available on the internet. If you're an enterprise which doesn't want to go internet, then you can only make that Windows Azure Pack available to your corpnet, all right? When you're thinking of networks, think about isolation. Isolation is the most important thing. How do you isolate the internet from damaging your management infrastructure? And how do your tenants, if you've got multiple tenants, how do you ensure that your tenants are isolated from each other from a networking standpoint? All right? Let's talk about storage. So like I said, you've got a variety of different options for storage. You can have a SAN, which is front-ended by iSCSI or Fibre Channel. You can have third-party NAS devices. Or in this release, you can actually create a scale-out Windows Server, scale-out file server, SMB 3.0 file server, layered on top of just SAS disks, JBOD disks attached by a SAS controller to a bunch of machines. And your bunch of Hyper-V hosts and VMM can administer all these using a standards-based approach for management. All right? So now I'm going to switch to demo mode, and I don't think I'm going to come back really to slides other than just to tell you what demos I'm giving. So now I'm going to take what I just said and give you a few snippets of demos which take you from Erin's whiteboard to what reality, what she really wants to be able to do. All right. Now this is where, okay, can you see this? Fantastic. I can't see it on this screen. Is that intentional? Okay, I guess it's meant to be a secret for me. All right, this is going to be fun. All right, so let's start with storage. All right? I'm sorry, I did this too early. So the first demo I'm going to give you is how do you actually manage your storage? How do you create a scale-out file server where you've just got a bunch of disks which are attached to a Hyper-V host, and you want to create a scale-out file server? All right? So let's look at that demo. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the right box. All right. So if you go to here, if you go to look at... This is new in 2012 R2, where we allow you to create a physical computer profile, right? And if you look at the properties of this profile, it basically is the classical, properties page, which gives you, what is the kind of physical machine that this is going to look like, how many NICs does it have, how many disks does it have, what's the OS configuration, and so on and so forth, right? But what you're really doing here is you're modeling the fact that this is going to be a file server. It's a profile for a file server, right? And there are additional sessions which Hector is going to give on storage, which will tell you in detail how this deployment is actually done. Let me just go to the fabric, and I will go and create a file server cluster, right? I'll give it a name. I'll give the file server a name as well. I give it because we are creating a clustered file server, right? Now here, the important thing to recognize is I've got two options. Whoa. Okay. I can use either, is this visible to everybody? Yep. So I can either use an existing file server cluster that's been deployed, or more importantly, I can actually deploy a bare metal server and turn it into a file server. Okay? So I'm going to basically do that step here, right? Now, just like with bare metal Hyper-V provisioning, which VMM has always had, you're going to need to provide a run-as account to be able to authenticate yourself to the BMC, which is the baseboard management controller, right? And then we have two protocols, IPMI and SMASH. I'm going to leave it as IPMI. And here I'm going to basically provide the IP address of the range of IP addresses that I wanted to go and discover. Right? This you will know from when you deploy your BMCs, you need to assign IP addresses to your baseboard management controllers. Right? So you need to know upfront, or you can do a full scan, but a full scan is fairly, you know, because it's a network scan. And I'm sure your networking people are not going to be pretty happy with that. Right? So all I'm done here is I've just added the IP addresses. I'm going to click next. Thank you. All right, so I basically discovered, I don't know what that was. Oh. I guess it was too early to say thank you. Anyway, so I've discovered these two machines, right, which I want to convert into a scalar file server. I'm going to select both of them. Right? And then I just need to provide it, you know, a couple of names. I need to, let's call it FSO1. And I'm going to call it FSO2. And I'm ready to go. Right? So essentially, I'm not going to actually go through clicking all of the, you know, let it go through, but effectively what I've done right now is I've got all the automation in place ready so that at the end of this step, if I were to click OK, I'll basically get a clustered file server using these two hosts. All right? So let's get out of this. I'm not going to go here. I'm going to go back into... Now, I'm going to go back into a system where the file server is already deployed, right? Let's assume that the file server is already deployed. Now, in this file server, the first thing I want to be able to do is I want to be able to add additional disks from a storage spaces, right? I want to be able to create storage spaces on the JBOD and then add a pool into the storage file server. So I'm going to go manage pools. I'm going to create a new pool. Let's call it demo3. And the thing you want to know, understand here is that we want to do intent-based provisioning, which is that the VM or anything that wants to get deployed as a workload expresses its intent of SLA that it wants. And then we will translate that intent and automate the deployment to the right storage. Right? So here I'm basically saying that these disks, they happen to be really good disks, and therefore I'm going to give this a gold classification. I'm going to select three disks. Actually, let's select four. We do three-way mirroring when we actually create the space. So I'm going to create the space. I'm going to create this, and I'm going to hit OK. And let's go back and see how this job is progressing. If you can't see it, just let me know, right? I'll use Zoom it, but it becomes a little awkward for me to use Zoom it So let's see how. Okay, it's done. Great. So we've got a new storage pool, right? Now I can go back to the fabric. I can go back to this file server. And I can create a file share now, right? And now I can create the file share on the disks that were pooled into a space in called demo3, right? And as again, I'll provide it a classification. Let's give it a size, right? And I can use both NTFS or the REFS file system. I can provision it with any one of them, and I can go and create. It would be helpful if I gave a name to it. And I can go and create. And let's go take a look at the job right now. So what's happening right now is that I'm actually going through the process of creating a file share on the storage. All right? Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, you know, why do you give it another classification when you already have classified the underlying JBOD disks? Well, it depends because, you know, those same JBOD disks may be accessed using a different protocol in a different environment, and in that case, they might want to classify it differently. That's why we give you the flexibility being able to classify both at the file server level as well at the disk level. All right? So now that this file share has been created, you'll see this file share show up here. Right? Now, all you need to do is you need to go to the demo cluster, right? and you need to go to the properties, right? You need to go to file share storage, right? And you can now add a file share path, right? And you'll see that this path now, you'll see that this path now shows up as a valid file share to be provisioned for a cluster, right? I won't go through this, but the moment you hit OK on this, we will go and make sure that every node in the cluster, right, is appropriately ACL'd to the file share. So the file share, the ACLs on the file share will be appropriately modified so each host can access this file share. Okay? All right. So this walks you through how we were able to deploy a storage space and a file server. All right? Now, this was one of the capabilities that was done in Windows Server 2012, but we could not get to in SP1. There's an ability for you to be able to use synthetic fiber channel inside the guest. Right? But synthetic fiber channel involves two things. The first and foremost is you need to be able to project a synthetic fiber channel device into the guest. And the second thing is that you need to be able to program your storage fabric, these fiber channel switches, so that the SAN is connected to the actual guest. All right? And so VMM actually does both. Again, using standard industry protocols, we can actually provision the storage switches and ensure that the storage SAN exposes itself into the guest. All right? So I'm going to now go through that demo, which shows you how we're going to do synthetic fiber channel into the guest. First and foremost, right, you go to this guest, which is right now stopped. Just right-click on it. Actually, you can go to properties other way as well. You go to storage, right, and you need to add a fiber channel array, right? So what you're doing essentially here is that you are exposing a fiber channel SAN into the guest, right? And so you can select these and hit create and give a zone set. A zone set is what qualifies inside a fiber channel SAN, which machines have access to which ports on the fiber, on the array, right? And so effectively, if I go through this, I'm not going to go through this right now because I'm going to mess up Hector's demo if I do that. But effectively, what I do here is I can allow you to provision and program the fabric so that this storage is available to the guest. All right? I'm sorry? No, I'm saying VMM does that. So the question was, do you read zoning? My point is, that's exactly what VMM does. When you click OK here, we will actually go talk to the fiber channel switch, and we will actually program it correctly so that the appropriate storage is exposed into the guest. So I'll now go to a guest, right, which is actually which actually has been exposed to a fiber channel array. So if you look here, this fiber channel array has been exposed to this particular guest. It's a VM that's running. And I can now go and add a disk, right? And I can add a disk. And if I were to add a disk and go back into this VM, actually, let me see if I can do that if I have enough time. Let's go add this disk, right? And while that's completing, let's go to the actual VM itself. I should run a rescan right now. This disk has shown up because right now I basically added the disk in VMM, right? So in disk manager inside this VM, you basically see this new LUN, and this new LUN is sitting on that fiber channel storage, which we just programmed through the fabric and then created a LUN right from inside VMM. And this we can do because we use SMIS to be able to talk both to the fiber channel switches as well as to the SAN. All right? All right. So this, I think, all right. So the next thing people want is that they want a reduction in time when you actually provision from VMM. In 2012, there was a capability called ODX, which allowed you to use the capabilities of the SAN to copy the backend copy of storage, right? However, in VMM 2012 SP1, we did not support using ODX from a VMM library share, right? So now we actually allow you to do that. I'm not going to go through the demo, but effectively in VMM, you can actually use ODX to, if you've got a SAN which is shared between the Hyper-V host and the VMM library, we'll use ODX to actually copy the bits from the SAN or from the source to the destination, thereby dramatically reducing the network traffic and dramatically reducing the time it takes for you to deploy a VM when you start the deployment from the VMM library. Because what happens when you start deployment is we take the VHD, which is sitting on the VMM library, and then have to copy it onto the Hyper-V host or to the clustered shared volumes. And that, you know, we use bits in SP1. Now that we support ODX, we can actually use a SAN with this optimized copy to make that happen. So it's far faster than we've been able to do it in the past. All right? The next new thing I wanted to talk about is that in Windows Server 2012 R2, we've enabled you to actually create a guest cluster using a shared VHDX file. Right? This is just fantastic. You don't need iSCSI. You don't need Fibre Channel. All you need is access to a shared storage. It can be a CSV, clustered shared volume, or it can be a file server, which those VMs need to have access to, right? And then you place a VHDX file on that shared storage, and then these VMs can actually create a guest cluster, right, in using that shared VHDX file. That shared VHDX file shows up as a block device inside those VMs, and it allows you to create a guest cluster. In fact, we, in our test environment today, are actually creating a SQL guest cluster, right, which is running on shared VHDX. And all the management databases for VM, VMM, OM, SM are all running off of that SQL, running off of that shared VHDX guest cluster. All right? So what I'm going to, now the interesting thing here, actually, I want to, let me just go to the demo. So what I'm going to do now is going to go to a demo which shows you this guest clustering capability. All right? So the first thing I want to show you is I'm in the VMM library, and let's open the service template. Right? Now this is a service template for a SQL guest cluster. Okay? Let's go look at the properties of this service template. And let's go look at the properties of the secondary disk on which the SQL database is going to reside. Okay? A couple of things to look at it here. Yeah, okay, there we go. So let's look at this. I'm just going to expand this a little bit. Like I said, UI is important, but automation is key. All right, so the thing I want you to really focus on here is a couple of things. Look at this checkbox. It basically says, share this disk across the service tier. So when we'll actually, I'm sorry, I got a touch screen as well, so I'm touching my screen and just moving things around. So when we actually create a guest cluster, we will actually share this VHDX file. And the VHDX file is actually currently sitting on the VMM library. So when we spin up instances of the SQL tier, we're going to actually use the shared VHDX. Okay? But here's the really interesting part. I mean, the fact that we've got shared VHDX, that's fantastic. But how do you automate the creation of the guest cluster? Now, when you're creating a guest cluster, right, the thing you've got to remember is that the first node in the cluster does something different. The first node in the cluster actually enables clustering, creates the cluster, and then the rest of the nodes actually then join themselves into the cluster. For those of you who are familiar with the concept of a service template in VMM, When we introduced service templates, each instance in the tier ran exactly the same code, right? So we changed it in 2012 R2 to model the construct of the first node doing something different and the second nodes and the other subsequent nodes doing something different. So what I'm going to do now is go back into the service template, right? And then I'm going to go and show you a couple of interesting things. Let's go look at the application configuration, right? And the interesting thing here is to look at this. Now this is a this is going to be a two-node cluster, okay? So since this is a two-node cluster, what you see here is that I have okay, so I have a set of commands when I can run when the first VM is created, and I have a set of commands that I can run separately when the second VM is created. All right? So let's go take a look at what these scripts are really doing. Okay? What these scripts are really doing are they're actually calling a PowerShell script. Okay? So I'm going to show you the PowerShell script that's run by the first node. Right? Now, I won't go into the details of this PowerShell script, but if you go through the script, essentially what this first PowerShell script is doing, it is creating a guest cluster. It is just creating a cluster, okay? And then if you look at what the second nodes are doing, is they are just adding themselves into the cluster. If you look at the last line, they are just adding themselves as a cluster node to the existing cluster, okay? That's all that they're doing, okay? Now, how do you create a SQL cluster, right? This is a traditional failover cluster. You first create a guest cluster, and then you basically deploy SQL, and then SQL gets clustered on top of that, right? So what I've shown you so far is the ability for you to create that cluster, right? The second set of things that need to happen, if you go back into the service template, right? If you go back into the service template, is that you need to make sure that your, go back to the first node. You need to make sure there are a bunch of things that you run so you can actually run the install of cluster and then tell SQL, run the installation of SQL and then call the ability for SQL to cluster itself. All right? And the way you do that is by running this, I've got this automation here. I'll just briefly show you the scripts that you run. So, this is the script that the first node will run after installing SQL. Rather, this is the INI file that is used by the SQL installer, right? And if you see the first line, it will actually install a failover cluster, okay? And if you look at the same file for the other nodes, they will basically just add themselves as a node to the existing cluster, all right? So what I've shown you here in this brief demo is how you can actually create a guest cluster using shared VHDX file and how you can model the construct of a SQL cluster as an example using shared VHDX. And just like I said, we'll make available all the templates for System Center. We will also make this SQL cluster using shared VHDX sample available for you so you can use it and customize it for your requirements. Make sense? Thank you. All right, so let's go back. All right, so I think we've already gone through this slide about networking. Now I'm going to leave out this demo as well. So just to let you know that VMM actually has integration with the IPAM server that comes with Windows Server. So now you can do two things. You can actually create your networks in VMM, and IPAM will pick it up and display it correctly inside IPAM. You can also create your logical network inside IPAM, and it will push it over and it will create the appropriate logical network inside VMM. So if you as a customer are using IPAM to model your networks, we'll do both sides. So you can actually generate reports, and you can actually use VMM to IPAM to model your networks as well. All right? So the next one is kind of interesting. This is, what do you do with a top-of-rack switch? So let's go to, or how do we manage top-of-rack switches? So here I'm showing you a VM. Okay. Now this VM, I'm going to try and ping out from this VM. Okay. All right. Whoa. All right. So what's happening is that this virtual machine is unable to reach outside, right? And this virtual machine, if I go look inside VMM, right, fab AR test 2, if you look at it, right, it's running on a host called fab infra 1, right? So what's gone wrong? Let's go figure out. Now, previously, it was really difficult to figure out what had gone wrong. But now, let's actually go to the logical network view, right? Because remember, this is a physical construct. Let's go to the logical network view, go to the fab infra 1 host, and go look at the NIC, right? Right? Now look here. What you're seeing here, it's telling you that that particular port that this physical NIC of Hyper-V host is connected to on the network switch, right? It's telling you that that port is not configured correctly. It's configured in access mode, whereas it should rightfully be configured in trunk mode, because there are a certain set of VLANs this Hyper-V host expects. Remember, you as an administrator configured a logical networks. You told VMM that I want the following VLANs to show up on this NIC, right? Now we can actually query the physical switch on the port and say, are you piping those VLANs to me or not, right? So that is what this is telling me. And I can do this because I'm using OMI and data center abstraction layer to talk to the physical switch, get the appropriate configuration information, and tell you as a customer, right, hey, something is wrong with the physical switch. Now, in a lot of companies, this gives you knowledge that you can use to go talk to your networking administrator and say, hey, something is wrong on your side. And he, thank you. Yeah, I've been a number on the situations. So I understand. But remember, this is about empowering you to have a collaborative discussion with the networking folks, right? All right. So what I can do is I've got a button here which says remediate, right? And what this actually will do is it will actually go configure the switch in the right mode. Now, this depends on your networks and your networking environments. Some cases, your network administrator may allow you to do this. Some cases, they may not, right? But we give you the option to do it. If not, at least you have the ability to tell your networking administrator, hey, something is wrong, please go fix it correctly, all right? Now, I'm not going to wait for the remediation to work, but effectively what we have done is we go to the Arista switch, again using data center abstraction layer, tell it, it'll configure the right VLAN to be piped out, and then it'll start working, okay? It'll configure itself. It takes about 45 seconds, and I don't have enough time, so I'm not going to wait for this to continue. All right? So now that we are done with that, let's see what else we have. All right. So the next thing is now I'm going to switch to, so far we've installed a wingtip, right? Now imagine where wingtip is now going to a service provider and asking the service provider to give it some capacity, right? So I've bought some capacity, I've got this ability to spin up VMs in the service provider's data center. But now I want to be able to take my IP addresses from Wingtip and take it to Contoso, right? So how do I do that? Let me show you a demo of how you can do that. So now, I'm going to first go to the Contoso company's portal, okay? The first and foremost thing you should recognize that I'm actually being able to use my corporate credentials. Now, this one is set up to actually use my Microsoft credentials, but if, you know, Wingtip has acquired capacity from Contoso, they will actually federate identity using the Windows Azure Active Directory service, right? So here, I'm literally using my enterprise credentials from Microsoft. I'm going to log in. So just imagine I'm a Contoso customer. I'm logging in to the, I'm a Wingtip employee, infrastructure admin. I'm logging into the Contoso portal. The first thing you'll recognize is this portal it looks exactly like Windows Azure. This is available to you as enterprise customers or as service providers, and this is available through this capability that we call Windows Azure Pack. Okay? You can spin up VMs, you can spin up websites, just like you can do in Azure. But now let's go spin up a network, right? So what am I doing as a wingtip administrator? I want to be able to create a virtual network inside the Contoso environment, right? I'll go through custom create. I'm going to give it a name. Let's call it, because it is the marketing department that requires extra capacity because they're running some kind of a campaign. Let's call this network Wingtip Marketing. Okay? Now, remember, these VMs are going to be spun up on Contoso's infrastructure. But when they spin up, they need the ability to resolve host names. So they need a DNS server, right? So this is a DNS server that potentially is running on-premise, that is on Wingtip's side, right, which we will inject into any VM that gets created so that they can resolve their IP addresses. I'm just going to give it the best address that I know. The next thing is, now remember, I'm sitting on Wingtip. I've got a bunch of VMs that are sitting on Contoso's environment. How are those VMs going to connect back to me? The way you do that is you set up a site-to-site tunnel. You set up a site-to-site connection. And in Windows Server 2012 R2 and in VMM 2012 R2, we are shipping an out-of-box site-to-site gateway which will act like the following. So the RAS role, remote access role in Windows Server 2012 R2 has been enhanced to act like a site-to-site gateway. It will act like a NAT. It will act like a virtual-to-physical gateway for NVGRE as well. And we are going to ship a service template in VMM out of the box, which will allow you to automate the deployment of this gateway, right? So what's happened on the Contoso side is that they've actually deployed a gateway, right? And I'll when I go to Contoso's VMM server, I'll show you that as well. So I set up configure a site-to-site VPN. I want to set up an IP subnet, right? This is the IP address that I want to be able to create. This is the gateway subnet, right? I can also enable BGP. So I can have multiple connections into the service provider, and by enabling BGP, the gateways will automatically reconfigure as new networks show up on either side. I'm just going to leave it out for now. We actually technically use IBGP because there is a lot of concern if you use BGP, you can actually screw up routing quite badly. But this is IBGP, so it's controlled in that environment. I can add an address space here if I want. I can give it, now remember, I'm setting up a site-to-site VPN, right? I need to tell Contoso what is the IP address of my edge device. This could be a Juniper device, it could be a Cisco device, or it could be a remote RAS server, right? So I need to give it a name. Actually, let's give it Wingtip Edge. I'll give it the IP address. Okay. And I need to give it a shared key. Okay. And then I need to give it an address space as well, but I'm just going to stay out of that for the time being, right? And what's happening now in these few clicks of a button, me as Wingtip went to the Contoso portal and I've been able to spin up my network, right? So you see this activity going on here at the bottom, and this network has shown up here, all right? Now let's minimize this. Let's actually go to the VMM server of the of Contoso, okay? Now let's go look at the VM networks there. Remember I told you VMs connect to VM networks. So if Wingtip is going to spin up VMs on Contoso infrastructure, they're going to need VM networks. Now let's go see what happened here. If you see here, what's happened at the VMM server on the back end on Contoso, which automated all the creation of the networks, in the VMM server, you actually see a new network having been spun up called Wingtip Marketing. And it contains the IP address which was provided by the customer, right? And if you go look at the details, it will have all the details of how the gateway has been configured. All right? Now, briefly, I just want to show you. This is Contoso's VMM network, VMM environment, right? Let's go take a look at the library. Let's go take a look at a service template. And if you look at this, this is a service template for automating the deployment of an edge gateway, right? So in Windows Server 2012 R2 and in VMM 2012 R2, we are going to ship the ability for you as customers to be able to deploy edge gateways right out of the box, right? Of course, there are third-party solutions available as well, but at least from a customer standpoint, we are trying to give you all the value out of the box, okay? All right. So this brings me to the end of the demo from a networking standpoint. Let's go back. All right. So I've showed you how to actually do site-to-site networking. All right. Now let's move on. All right. The next thing I want to very briefly show you is what we have done for you for disaster recovery. Right? This was demoed at the keynote very briefly. But the idea here is that we've got a SaaS application called Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager. Right? And that allows you to automate and orchestrate your disaster recovery solution. Right? So let's say you've got two data centers, right? You can go to Hyper-V Recovery Manager inside your, let me just show this demo. Right? First, let's log on. To my server first. Okay. Let's first log on to the Windows Azure portal. Now, because I'm inside CorpNet, I'm actually using single sign-on, so I don't even need to actually provide my credentials. So I'm logging on to the Windows Azure portal here, right? And there is a left bar item called Recovery Services, right? Right, let's go to Recovery Services. You'll see I've got a vault that's created here for Redmond, right? Let's go look at the dashboard. That showed the fact that I've got two VMs under protection, but this is what is important here, what I want to show you. So what I've got here is I've modeled my, remember I told you, you model your resource pools as clouds? So here I've said that my Redmond Gold Cloud is being protected by my Seattle Gold Cloud, right? And I've paired these two together using Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager, right? Now when I go to my VMM server and I create any VM, right? In the VM, I can actually go ahead and when I actually create a VM or after creating a virtual machine, I can enable recovery right from inside VMM at the time of deployment or post-deployment. And what will happen is that VMM will actually place the VM on the primary site. It will, through the recovery manager, go talk to the secondary site and place the VM on the secondary site as well. Right? And that way, you have replication that's entirely configured and automated for you. And then using Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager, you can actually create recovery plans and orchestrate the recovery. If you want a certain set of VMs to come up in a particular sequence, you can do that right from inside Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager, right? So if you look here, actually technically speaking, these VMs are actually replica VMs. If you notice the icon, it's slightly different. So these VMs are running on the Seattle cloud where they are being replicated from the primary cloud. And that's why they are stopped right now because the primary VMs are still running, all right? So this is a great capability, really, really simple to set up. You know, Hyper-V Recovery Manager is very, very easy to set up. Go to the website, upload a certificate, and just download a binary that you need to install on the VMM server. And that's all you need to do. And then you can orchestrate ODR right from the cloud. All right? Thank you. Yes. The question was, do you need VM on both sides? Yes, you do. All right. The next thing that, you know, we've sort of enhanced is that previously, when you actually had user roles, you had to assign set of permissions. And those set of permissions were common to all the clouds that the user had access to, right? But sometimes you want to say that you as a user, I want to give you access, you know, all rights in one cloud, maybe the QA cloud. But in the production cloud, I don't want you to be able to do anything other than start or stop VMs. So now you can actually do that in 2012 R2. All right? The next thing I want to show you very briefly is the work that we have done in collaboration with the operations manager team, which has significantly enhanced the management pack for VMM and really has provided rich dashboarding capabilities for US customers. So here, I'm looking at the cloud health, which is a new dashboard that we've added. I can actually go deeper down, go into the fabric health, right? And this will show me the entire fabric that is backing this particular cloud. It'll show me the network, it'll show me the storage, it will show me the the compute, it'll show me the file shares, it'll give me all the details, right? I can click on the network node, and I can actually go to the network vicinity diagram or the network vicinity dashboard, and this will tell me how this particular host is connected to the particular switch and which hosts are connected to this particular switch. I can show computers here, and now I, as a customer, have full visibility into how this physical switch layout connects to my VMs and to the hosts. I have great visibility into this. You know, allows me to debug networking problems right from inside here in partnership with the with your networking teams. But this is the rich dashboarding capabilities. There's a lot here. Actually, there was a session yesterday by Akin and Laura Cruz on what's new in OM in 2012 R2, and they gave more details about this integration. But I just wanted to highlight that we've done a lot of work to actually show the integration to enhance the management pack and dashboarding capabilities between VMM and OM. All right, so in summary, you know, we've built upon the investments that we did in Windows Server 2012 and Systems Runner 2012 SP1. We have enabled a whole bunch of scenarios end-to-end for the cloud operating system, right? And there is a lot of, there's a list of features. You know, I know people like lists of features that are there in 2012 R2. It's there in the appendix of this presentation. So when this goes online, you'll be able to get that list if you didn't like this format of presentation. All right, so this brings me to the end of my conversation. Thank you so much, and we've got a few minutes. I'd be happy to take questions. Thank you. Yes?
Are there any enhancements? Is this on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's on.
Are there any enhancements to dynamic optimization? In particular, we'd like to use it more with Zen Server.
So there was a question on is there any enhancements to dynamic optimization? I couldn't get the second part of your comment, though.
In particular, with Zen Server VMs.
So the question is there any optimization to, is there any enhancements to DO for Zen Server VMs? Not specifically for Zen Server, but I'd be happy to talk to you offline about what problems you're seeing. Yes.
Is there any plan to get the naming conventions for the features consistent between VMM and Windows Server? I work with VMM quite a bit, and like checkpoints versus snapshots and various things like that, which can be confusing to end users.
So there's a question on, you know, is there any plan to actually have more consistent naming between Windows Server, Hyper-V, and VMM? Yes, absolutely. Our desire is always to do that. But in the past, we haven't done so. We'll definitely try and see what we can do more in the future to be more consistent in terms of naming. But now that you already know the inconsistencies, you can tell the customers. So. Yeah, but we certainly understand the pain. We are definitely going to, you know, work. But, you know, sometimes these things are not as simple as they look, because if I go make a change in VMM, you know, the upgrade paths and a lot of these can become really, really complicated. Unfortunately, that's, you know, because the while it looks like a very trivial thing, some of these changes actually can be fairly deep and you know, fairly intro, in fairly deep. So it's sometimes not that easy to make the changes. But definitely our desire is to actually make sure that they're named consistently. But you also got to remember that VMM introduces concepts which don't exist in Windows Server. So that obviously we'll have our, we'll have our unique naming there. But you're absolutely right that for things that, that you can do from Hyper-V or cluster, we should name them the same. Point well taken. Thank you.
Can you share anything, what's happening with App Controller and is it?
So the question is, what's happening with App Controller? App Controller will ship as a part of System Center 2012 R2. It is a if you want to use the full richness of VMM service templates for your self-service customers, you will have to use App Controller. Because the portal that I showed you, the Windows Azure pack, that does not surface VMM service templates. That is only available through App Controller.
Are they going to merge with the Azure pack?
So the question is App Controller going to merge with the Windows Azure pack? That's a future statement, which I'm unfortunately not allowed to answer at this point. Good question, though. Nice
try. Is there a way to restrict the what users can do in the portal? So some users aren't well-adverse with network versus system configuration. Is there a way to actually separate the roles for that online portal?
I'm sorry, I didn't fully understand the question.
So the online portal that you showed us, it showed that you can set up a network, you can set up websites, and so on and so forth. Is there a way to restrict different logins to have different permissions to change stuff?
So the question is there a way to actually have access control on what objects you get access to when you log into the Windows Azure Pack portal? At this point of time, there isn't, but there is certainly something that we're going to look at in the future. However, the way to restrict it is that in Windows Azure Pack, right, you actually create plans, right? So you can create a plan which only exposes VMs and give that to a customer. So when that customer logs in, they'll only be able to create VMs. You create a separate plan which says you can create only websites and they won't be able to create VMs, right? However, if you give them the, let me just leave it at that. So you can actually control by creating plans. There is a talk by John Ballard on how you actually configure the service administration part of that self-service portal, which talks about how you create plans and which you can restrict what each of the customers do.
Right. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? Yes. So, Marcos.
Hi, Vijay. Just one question is, regarding VMM, one of the best practices is just install outside of the hypervisor or the cluster that you are managing. So I saw that on the first slides, you are say that you will spin a VM of VMM inside of the cluster that you are managing.
Yep.
So there are a few changes.
There are changes, a few changes in R2. Yes, we actually will support running VMM as a VM on the Hyper-V cluster that it is managing.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Any more room in the early adopter program?
I'm sorry?
You've got room in the early adopter program for R2?
Is there room for a TAP program in R2?
Yeah, early adoption.
So we have a TAP program, which I think is already full, but the preview release of Windows Server and System Center will go out on exactly the same day. I think it's going to be sometime when we go to TechEd Europe, and you will have access to those bits. Absolutely, you'll have access to those bits.
Vijay, just have a question around shared VHDX.
Yes.
The demo you showed us showed that it was only available in service template. Is that actually available as well on individual VMs to add it as to already built VMs or new
no,
VMs it, that you would
so
add?
So the question is shared VHDX is available to you outside of service templates? And the answer is no. It's available only as a part of service templates. But if you want to have very simple VMs which do nothing else except spin up Windows Server and install in all clustering, you can do that with shared service templates. Okay. You don't have to do all the richness of application deployment. It can be a very simple guest cluster using Windows Server. Okay. And again, we could expose it normally as well, but we are trying to encourage you to actually automate things so that you are really freed up from doing manual tasks. That's why we sort of take these decisions.
Okay. Make sense?
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, folks, I want to thank you so much for coming here and spending time with us. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much. Really appreciate it. I'm humbled. Thank you. Thank you.